Good morning, First Mennonite friends. It's a pleasure to be here with you this morning. I will give you a little bit of a trigger warning. This sermon talks about my dad's journey with cancer, so I'm just going to make you aware of that. In March of 2024, I was very happily working at Mennonite Central Committee as the Material Resources Coordinator. I loved that job. I was finally settling into it after 5 to 6 years of upheaval internally at MCC. I enjoyed visiting with quilting groups, hosting volunteers, having mostly great co-workers, and the travel was amazing. I'm so thankful to have had the opportunity to hear people's stories in Canada and across the world, and to learn and grow. At that time, I'd worked for MCC Alberta for about 14 years, and I anticipated working at MCC until I retired. But just on a whim, I saw a sign for a prospective student day at SAIT, and I thought, huh, that sounds cool, I think I'll go. I wasn't looking for a career change, and it turns out to do what I thought I might want to do, I'd have to go back to school and take chemistry. No thank you. But there was something inside of me saying, what if something is coming? Heads up. I'm terrible at taking hints from my subconscious, so I continued on my merry way. Fast forward 10 and a half months, and I walked into a meeting at MCC expecting to discuss plans for the following year, only to find my supervisor, which I expected, and the executive director, which I did not. I was being laid off. I don't think I've ever had such a humongous shock in my life. I had no idea that this was being considered, and all I had was the feeling of what if from the year before. I worked at MCC for another 6 weeks, and I cried every day and did everything in my power to leave a job that I loved on good terms. There was some relief. I didn't have to try and solve ongoing problems anymore because they were no longer mine. Not my problem was my new personal saying. Instead of asking what if, I was asking what's next. I didn't need to find work immediately, which I was very thankful for. I rested, I slept, I napped, and then I rested some more. I applied for one job and was neither surprised or disappointed that I didn't even get an interview. I called it my Linda is practicing being retired era, and I loved it. It was fantastic. I highly recommend it. I had a couple of massages, I took care of some medical appointments, slept some more, did a bit more gardening than usual, and caught up with friends. All the things I had had less time for while working. The catching up with friends piece ended up being crucial in the following months, answering the what now of the time, but we're not there yet. And then came June 18th. Dad hadn't been feeling well, and I went to Mom and Dad's house to check on him. I was shocked at how terrible he looked, how weak he seemed, how disoriented his speech and thinking were, and it was a huge decline from when I'd seen him at Margaret Gertson's funeral just a few days before. Looking back, the fact that Dad was not watching playoff hockey should have been our first clue that something was seriously wrong. I thought we should call 911. But Mom and Dad thought it wasn't necessary, especially as Dad had a doctor's appointment the following day. We compromised on calling 811 for health advice, and within an hour, a community paramedic was at Mom and Dad's house to perform some basic tests. Nothing was unusual except for a very high calcium level. The paramedic left with Dad promising to attend his doctor's appointment the next day. On June 19th, the following day, Dad was admitted to the Rocky View. His family doctor took one look at him and said, you have to go to the emergency room now. And it was that evening that the C word, cancer, was mentioned for the first time. Mom was exhausted, and so she'd gone home, and so I was with Dad when a resident came in to talk to us about the high calcium levels. There are three reasons for high calcium levels, he said, and the first two are incredibly unlikely. The third reason is cancer, likely lymphoma, and I'm pretty sure that's what we're looking at. It fell to me to call Mom at midnight while driving home on the Deerfoot to tell her what the doctors suspected. The official diagnosis of lymphoma came a week later, the day before Mom's 60th wedding anniversary, Mom and Dad's 60th wedding anniversary, a true beacon to in sickness and in health. Dad asked the doctor how much time, and she responded with, "Go ahead and buy the green bananas, but don't book the world cruise." A quick story about the wedding anniversary. We had planned to have family photos taken on the evening of the 20th of the, as part of the celebration. My oldest kid had come down from Edmonton for family photos and for dinner, but our plans changed very quickly, not only because it was pouring down rain, but because Dad was in the hospital. Our photographer was incredibly flexible, and we ended up taking over the sacred space at the Rocky View. They weren't the family photos we wanted, but they were the ones we needed. They're beautiful and capture all of us so well. I'll show you them after if you want. At the hematology clinic the next week, the doctors there were much more explicit. Depending on which choice Dad made, do nothing, do minimal chemo, do regular chemo, the results of which were not guaranteed, it could be weeks to months, to whatever longer timeline God has for him. So many what-if questions leading to what's next and what's now. So every 3 weeks, Mom and Dad trundled off to chemo, and I ferried them to cancer clinic appointments. The what now question, with a healthy dose of what if, now moved to the forefront. My practice retirement still existed, but with less time daily, as I became my parents' chauffeur, chaperone, note taker, parking payer, cheerleader, and asker of awkward questions. And in between all this, I started looking for work. In springtime, I'd had a coffee and quilts conversation with my friend Ruth Bergen Braun, and she asked me, "Would you be interested in my job with Mennonite Church Alberta after I retire in November? It's 3 days a week, fully remote." And my answer was an immediate yes. I emailed Tim Weeb Neufeld that week and let him know I was very interested. I still applied for some jobs, but really, I was hanging on to the idea of working for MCA. The opportunity to do some writing, which I've very much missed. I could flex my time to help care for Mom and Dad. I would still be working for a nonprofit, and it was Mennonite adjacent. I thought it would be perfect. So, what if I applied for the MCA job? What would it bring to our home, to my life? And if I got the job, what would be next? What if I didn't get it? In September, I found out that I got the interim communications coordinator job. And it was originally intended to be finished now, at the end of April. And then it was extended to summertime, and now it's been extended to September 30th. Each week is different. Instead of traveling to distant countries, I'm traveling to the exotic locales of Lethbridge and Edmonton. But the fellowship I'm experiencing is fantastic. It's my goal to visit each of the 10 MCA churches in the province, and I've got two left. It has been a blessing to worship in Nuer, in French, with people from Liberia and South Sudan, and cradle Mennonites like myself. Dad was informed at the beginning of February that he was officially in remission. Praise God. We are so thankful for each and every medical staff person we've met on this journey. We are so grateful for the miracle of modern science and medicine. We've been treated with nothing but dignity, respect, and care. Dad has his own personal chemo recipe on file at the cancer clinic, and we'll have appointments there every 3 months for the next year. We have no reason to think that the lymphoma will come back, but who knows? And we still have questions. What if? What then? And what now? So in this season of Eastertide, the time after Easter, it's gotten me thinking, what did the disciples think about Jesus foreshadowing his own death? It happens again and again in the Gospels. Jesus says something about his death, and the disciples don't realize that he's talking about what will happen. Did none of them think, what if? What next? What now? I can't believe they didn't. They're human, after all, and humans ask questions. And of course, being disciples means they had faith, but did they ever ask themselves, what on earth is this guy doing? When Jesus rode into Jerusalem on a donkey, I think the disciples thought they had one of their questions answered. The what's next question was answered by the thought that Jesus was going to become a king, overthrow the Romans, and that the disciples would become his knights of the round table. And as we know, Jesus was talking about a kingdom of a very different kind. We don't know how much questioning of Jesus the disciples did in the 3 years of ministry. Thomas couldn't have been the only one. And Jesus often answered many questions in riddles and parables, and even then the disciples didn't understand. I'm not sure I would have. But I can imagine some of the following questions. What if Jesus creates enough food to feed 5,000 people out of 2 loaves and some fishes, and there are more leftovers than the amount of food we started with, and we don't even have any Tupperware to hold it all? What's next when Jesus walks on the water out to where we're fishing? What if there are so many fish on the other side of the boat when this side has none that our nets break? What's next if Jesus talks to tax collectors, women, Jewish and non-Jewish alike, and children? What does that mean for us moving forward? What now after we've seen him hung on a cross and he's dead? What does that mean for us? What do we do? We thought we would be princes in his kingdom. Jeremiah 29:11 says, "For I know the plans I have for you, plans to prosper you and not to harm you, plans to give you hope and a future." Now, on the surface, it may seem like this verse is promising that everything is going to be sunshine and roses for all of us, that the disciples would have ruled Judea with Jesus, that I'd still be working for MCC, or that the MCA website was easy to work with, that my dad hadn't been diagnosed with cancer, and millions of hardships that encroach our lives every day. There would be no wars, no children starving, everyone in the world would have equitable access to clean water. Wouldn't that be nice if that were the case? The reality is that all those things exist, whether we like it or not. The reality is also that God has great love for us, and we can ask the what if, what's next, and what now questions. He holds the answers to those questions, and his love doesn't fail us. He might not answer them the way or in the time that we thought, but he has them. All it takes is trust, even when we don't understand, and we won't. I certainly didn't. In the past year, my life has been filled with questions. What's next for me, my job or lack of it, my parents' health, my family's plans, my oldest kid's marriage? It's been a time of trust and taking each day as it comes because there is a plan. I just don't see it yet. I'll see God's hands on my life when I look back on it, not necessarily in the immediate future. All I need to do is to trust that God's hands are guiding me in my life and that he has my best interests at heart. God cared for Jesus, the disciples, the woman at the well, the little kid who brought 5 loaves of bread and 2 fishes, and you and me, and the care is constant, consistent, and loving. Author Madeleine L'Engle, who wrote one of my favorite books, A Wrinkle in Time, writes, "I will have nothing to do with a God who cares only occasionally. I need a God who is with us always, everywhere, in the deepest depths as well as the highest heights. It is when things go wrong, when the good things do not happen, when our prayers seem to have been lost, that God is most present. We do not need the sheltering wings when things go smoothly. We are closest to God in the darkness, stumbling along blindly." May it be so.